It's time to think bigger.
Elias Pettersson scores!
And think bolder.
Matthew Tkachuk, what a goal!
This is Rintoul and Sermon.
Another chance, great save by Markstrom.
There is shot, rebound, great save by Dimko.
On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
What is going on? How's your Monday? Hope you're off to a great start. We're going to make your day better. That's what we do. Karen Sermon has a great day in front of her because she has an extended weekend. Took the Monday off. Hope she enjoys it. But boy, we got some content coming your way. And if you're a hockey fan, and almost every single one of you is, you had a lot to discuss over the last couple of days. And we will continue that conversation here. Jamie Dodd, the Shohei Ohtani of this program, producer and voice extraordinaire. He is the co-host today. Did you have a great weekend, Jamie?
I had a fantastic weekend. I had a very, very busy weekend, but probably not as busy as the NHL general manager fraternity did. They were extremely busy over the weekend.
Were they busier than the average hockey fan? I'm not sure, because the second we saw these protected lists, the second we saw all of these trades go down on Saturday, the NHL hockey fan had reaction and started putting a team together. And I can tell you they had a better weekend than Greg Ballack, something we'll get to a little bit later on in the program. A lot has happened since we turned our headsets off on Friday afternoon. There are plenty of moves that we're going to dive into and want you in on as well. 960-960 or 650-650. Without a doubt, the eyebrow raiser of all eyebrow raisers was the calculated gamble made by the Montreal Canadiens. Jamie, teams were deciding on who to protect. I know this as a hockey fan. We must protect Marc Bergevin. Hockey is a better place with him in it. He is always making polarizing moves, and he did so again this weekend.
Yeah, I think he won a lot of fans. Even if you weren't a Habs fan or you weren't converted to being a Habs fan, I think Marc Bergevin won a lot of respect and admiration from NHL fans over the course of their Stanley Cup run, just because, one, you know, he put that team together, took a lot of big swings to do it, but also the emotion and the joy that he demonstrated throughout a lot of that process. And now, you know, starting to burnish his reputation as a gambler a little bit here as well, making the big gamble, leaving Carey Price unprotected.
And it's a gamble by Carey Price as well. Make no mistake about it. And you know that signing off on this, whatever percentage chance you think there is that Carey Price gets picked up by Seattle, or he thinks there is, he has to at least be at peace with it, Jamie. And there have been a lot of connections made about his affiliation with Washington State and having played his junior hockey there and its proximity to BC, which is his home, and what he would mean for the Seattle Kraken and getting out of the pressure-packed market in Montreal. It is a fantastic debate. It's on the tee for sports radio. I'm sure you've had it with your friends over the course of the last couple of days. We'll ask you to have it again here with us today. Should the Seattle Kraken select Carey Price? There is a very good argument to be made either way. There really is. And some of this has to do with health, Jamie. It's part of the conversation we have to get into. Sounds like there's some GMs around the league that are upset with Marc Bergevin, because the second we find out Carey Price is unprotected, we also find out that Carey Price might not be right physically, but we won't know until after the expansion draft when he is consulted with his specialists.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part, right? It's not just that there's health issues, but that Seattle's not going to have all the information that they want to be able to have, right? They're not going to have all the physical, all the up-to-date information about Carey Price's health, about his injury status, before they have to make the selection on Wednesday. And you can understand why some other general managers might have a problem with that. It seems like Montreal's almost found a way to create an extra protection slot, right? Hey, if we don't protect this guy, but we announce that he's got these major health questions and they're not going to be resolved until Friday, I mean, you're drastically, you would think, lowering the chances of Seattle taking him. It's an interesting decision by Montreal.
And it's not just Carey Price. We saw this with Shea Weber last week. It became a debatable point. And depending on how cynical you are, you have a different view on Shea Weber. I lean to the side of the player. I think he's actually injured. But yeah, you can convince me after a couple of pops that maybe this is a ploy by both parties involved to help out Montreal's situation. And when you add the two together, Jamie, there's a compelling case to be made. Hey, Shea Weber's too hurt. We're not going to protect him. You shouldn't you shouldn't select him. Man, you don't want to have damaged goods for a guy who's just going to retire anyway. And then there's Carey Price. And the reason Price is so debatable has a lot to do with Marc-Andre Fleury as well, doesn't it? I know that he was healthier, but he certainly wasn't in the same place from a hockey standpoint that Carey Price is at right now, despite a mediocre season. We're talking about a guy who just backstopped his team to the Stanley Cup final. It's the best playoff run of his career. He's right around the age Fleury was. We just see Fleury come off a Vezina winning campaign, the first of his career at 38 years old. Boy, it makes for a really juicy discussion when you talk about Carey Price, the cap hit, the possibility in Seattle.
There's so many elements of the debate and elements that Seattle is going to have to consider before they make the decision one way or another, right? And by all accounts, they're doing their due diligence and more on the decision of whether or not to take Carey Price. But it is fascinating to think, Scotty, you know, think about back to the Montreal versus Toronto series, right? They obviously are down 3-1. Games 5 and 6 are both in overtime. You know, if a bad bounce goes against Montreal in one of those overtime periods and they're eliminated from the playoffs, are we even contemplating that Seattle's going to take Carey Price? I don't think we are, right? He needed to have that stellar playoff run all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals to even make this a question. Because if you were just judging him on his recent regular season performances, you're taking a pass, I think, on those 5 years and over $10 million per year left on his deal. But because he's coming off such an incredible playoff run and he looked like the goalie we had all grown accustomed to seeing for so long, it makes it at least a plausible decision if Seattle wants to go that route.
So someone comes in early and get those texts in 960, 960, 650, 650. I'm sorry, but Seattle wouldn't take Price if they knew it was best for him. He's been nothing but mediocre in the regular season the last 3 years or so. He got hot in the playoffs, but we can't even assume Seattle will get there to possibly have another run. 10.5 is a lot to invest in a goalie that has more bad days than good. However, they have the ability in Seattle to go get a very capable backup who plays a lot of games, which is what Mark Bergevin did this past season. And to the texter's point, Jamie, that Carey Price was mediocre in the regular season this year, absolutely fair. But once it got to crunch time, once it got to games that mattered, Carey Price was massive. And that had been Mark Bergevin's working theory with bringing in Jake Allen. Remember a year ago, he goes out and make that trade. It's less than a year ago, of course, because the NHL offseason was back in the fall instead of last summer. But he goes out and makes that trade for Jake Allen. What do we all say? How can you commit that much to goaltending? But the working theory was, if you keep Carey Price fresh, you might get exactly what we saw in the postseason. And that's tantalizing for Seattle, especially in a division that doesn't look terribly strong next year.
Well, and of course, I mean, we're really seeing how much Montreal values having that strong backup and having Jake Allen in the fold. That's why they're exposing Carey Price, right? Because so they can protect Jake Allen. They figured if they did it the other way, if they did, you know, decide to protect Carey Price and expose Jake Allen, then Jake Allen's probably landing in Seattle. So, I mean, just the fact that they're taking this risk shows you how much they value Jake Allen and the ability to keep Carey Price healthy and rested throughout the course of the regular season. And you're right, Seattle would be able to do that. There are enough quality goaltenders on these unprotected lists that they can go out and get a decent backup if they decide to go the Carey Price route in the first place. But the interesting thing, too, with the whole idea of, okay, maybe you're not going to get his best at night in, night out in the regular season, but you think you can get a really, really good version of Carey Price in the playoffs. You know, Seattle, they're coming into a division that doesn't look particularly strong. So I can imagine a lot of other teams in this situation. You know, if you were an expansion team going into the Atlantic division, right, and you looked at the team stacked up there and said, man, this is going to be a tough hill to climb to even make the playoffs, maybe you shy away from Carey Price, right? Because you're worried about his regular season performance. But I don't know, maybe even with a mediocre Carey Price showing up on a bunch of nights, Seattle might still be a playoff team in the Pacific Division.
Vegas is a clear playoff team. We saw Vegas do a little moving and shaking and end up with Nolan Patrick on Saturday. We can get into that throughout the course of the show. There were some trades and some that impacted this division, that being one of them, Vancouver Canucks picking up Jason Dickinson as well. But all of a sudden, Jamie, start to look at the division. And let's say for a second we go down the hypothetical highway where Seattle does take Carey Price. So let's just say they do that. All of a sudden, the division has John Gibson, Jacob Markstrom, Carey Price, Leonard and Fleury maybe in Vegas, at least one of them, maybe both, and Thatcher Demko in Vancouver. From a goalie standpoint, it's pretty solid. I mean, it's already there. About half the teams have excellent goaltending situations. Then you throw Carey Price into that mix, and man, you're seeing a great putt stalker, a stopper on most divisional play nights.
Yeah, unless you're playing maybe L.A. or San Jose. But yes, on a lot of other nights, you're seeing a very, very good goalie potentially in the Pacific Division.
To your point, it's not a great division next year, and this text came in as well. Grammert said, yeah, they should take Carey Price, in his opinion, but as a Canucks fan, that should worry me because Price makes them an instant playoff team. And this is part of what Ron Francis is trying to weigh. When Marc-Andre Fleury got brought to Vegas, it looked like a marketing play for a lot of it. Okay, he's going to give them stability in net, and if Marc-Andre Fleury recaptures his form, he helps make them competitive. But nobody saw coming what has transpired in Vegas. Carey Price, from a marketing standpoint, makes a lot of sense as well, Jamie. Like, his salary gets paid for in a heartbeat if they select him. That's not the reason you should do it from a hockey standpoint, but from a business standpoint, makes a lot of sense on that front, too.
It does. I will say, I think maybe people are overstating the business case a little bit here. Like, the one thing we know consistently about Seattle, they're not having any trouble generating interest in that market, right? Converting new fans, selling season tickets, getting people interested. They're not having any trouble doing that. Would Carey Price help? Yeah, he would. But this is not, I don't think this is a team that desperately needs to make a big splash like this for an established star at the expansion draft, just for the business side of things. You take it into consideration and it helps you, but I don't think selecting Carey Price is going to transform the Seattle Kraken from a business standpoint, right? It's a nice, you know, it's a nice bonus, but I don't think they're in a position where they need to do that because their business side, at least from my perspective, already seems so strong.
It is. I'm just saying he pays for himself. He'll pay for himself in jersey sales. He'll pay for himself in promotion. It's less about that. It's more about the number of years left on the contract. But this is also part of the calculated gamble. Jamie, if I said to you today, Carey Price has 5 years left on his deal, how many of those years do you think he plays in the National Hockey League, whether it's for Montreal, Seattle? Is it close to five? Is it somewhere in the middle? How many years left do you think he actually plays?
Yeah, I would probably pick four if I had to guess right now. Now, just knowing how competitive he is, you know, obviously he still is chasing that elusive Stanley Cup victory. So I would pick four and think maybe by the last year it runs out, whether it's just because he wants to retire or because of injury or whatever it is. But what it comes down to is there's so much uncertainty with the, especially with the news about his injuries right now and that he's exploring, you know, might need hip surgery, might need some other operations and procedures done. So, yeah, I would probably say four right now, but there's a lot of uncertainty in that answer.
Good text coming in saying, we don't know if Francis wants to be a playoff contender immediately. This should be going slow out of the gate at first. They could rebuild slowly, and fans in Seattle would understand because they're already a good hockey market. Vegas had to be good right away. I'm not convinced of that last statement. I believe there was a honeymoon phase, and Vegas didn't expect it was going to be that good right away. Vegas didn't draft the team saying, tell you what, man, we're going to the playoffs and we're going on a run. They changed their tactics midway through that first season because they were better than even they believed they were going to be. I'm sure when they made some of those side deals, it gave them some confidence, Jamie. They could be competitive for a playoff spot, but nothing like we saw Vegas do in that first season. With Seattle, I think your general philosophy in that text is correct. That's what you look at going in. But this is why a guy like Carey Price gives you the thought of being a game changer. And it leads into some other question about the expansion draft. Because, Jamie, as you know, Carey Price is not the only household name that's available out there. There are a bunch of players, and they all have a different question mark around them. Carey Price, it's what's the injury status, and are you willing to take on that type of cap money? The goaltender you love. Outside of that, you have questions. But there are guys out there like Vladimir Tarasenko that are available. Gabriel Landeskog is a free agent who is unprotected. And right now, Seattle's in this 72-hour negotiation window where they may be talking to Gabriel Landeskog as we are having this conversation. And it does make you wonder, how many swings do they take to be competitive out of the gate?
Well, that's the thing, and there's a text that comes in here from Gary in the 650-650 text message inbox. He says, it's a no-brainer for the Kraken. You couple him with a quality backup or that young Finnish goalie from Minnesota, plus they have nothing but cap space. That's from Gary. Well, the problem, I hear what you're saying, Gary, because yes, that's their biggest advantage right now, But if you take Carey Price, man, that starts to eat into your biggest advantage in a hurry, right? Carey Price by himself is an eighth of your cap space used up on one player, and you still have to take a player from the other 29 teams who are involved in this expansion draft. And then, as you say, Scotty, right, if I'm in Seattle's position, Vladimir Tarasenko is extremely, extremely appealing to me. We have heard strong rumblings that they're going to take Mark Giordano out of Calgary, right? He's making almost $7 million a year. Let's just say you did want to take those three players. You're up almost at $25 million now, and you've only taken three players. So, yeah, it's great to go into it saying, man, we have $81 million in cap space. We can do whatever we want. But you go for one mega, mega big ticket item like Carey Price, and all of a sudden the cap space can start to disappear in a hurry.
It can. You're absolutely right about that. So how many swings do you take? But as to your point, hey, Mark Giordano seems like this no doubt easy selection for Seattle. No matter what you think Mark Giordano has left in the tank, players like Mark Giordano generally weren't left exposed the last time around. Teams have taken a different approach. A lot of it has to do with the flat cap. Some of it has to do with age on rosters. Mark Giordano gives you the ability to plug a top four defenseman in there, and there are others available. When you couple a guy like Giordano with Price and some of the other names out there, maybe it changes your mind as to how competitive you can be. Now, look, a guy like Giordano in particular, Price is in a different category. All we know is that he's waived for the Seattle Kraken. He can be selected by them, but that doesn't mean they can trade him anywhere else. His no-move clause kicks right back in the second they take him, so it's one of two teams that he's going to be with next year, unless he approves something else. With Mark Giordano, he's an asset that you can bring in, and you might hold him the same way Vegas held Mark Mathot for a hot minute, and then he was off to Dallas.
Yeah, he would be a very, very attractive asset, especially, you know, if Seattle decided to use some of that cap space they have and retain salary, right? If you're retaining 50% of Giordano's salary, I mean, pretty much every team in the league is lining up to acquire his services, right? Still, at this age, at that number. So, yeah, that's why it does make so much sense that they're going to go and get Giordano from Calgary, because you have flexibility. You can use him. He's going to be a great fit on your blue line right away, but he's also an extremely attractive asset around the league. With Carey Price, as you say, it's much more limited. You can't, you know, I've seen people like, oh my goodness, can you imagine the bidding war if they take Carey Price and then they offer to retain 50% of his salary and what they could get from teams around the league? Well, it doesn't work like that, because he's going to have his no movement clause, and he's probably not going to be interested in waiving it again.
Texter sent in, wrong, Scotty. The owner in Vegas said they were going to win the cup in their first 5 years. Sure, that doesn't mean year number one. And Vegas never went into year number one thinking that was the end goal. If you remember the way they stockpiled assets, Vegas was set up to sell some things at the trade deadline. And we all believe that's what Vegas was going to do. Take the long-term approach. I look at a team that is closer to home and in a different league, the Vancouver Giants. Jamie, I don't remember if you know when they started, or if you remember when they started, the Vancouver Giants were competitive in year number one, and they had some overagers because they were allowed to carry extra overagers, and they could have competed for a playoff spot and maybe won a round. And you know what they did at midseason? They went, we're sticking with the plan. Like, we're good, but we're not a championship team, so we're going to trade off some of those assets. We all believed that's what Vegas was going to do. Hey, we've been competitive, but we all know what the real plan here is. They convinced themselves they were better than they ever thought they were going to be, so they changed their tactic. Sure, the owner said we'll win a cup in the first 5 years. He didn't think it was going to be in year number one, and I don't believe Ron Francis has the same view down in Seattle either.
No, he doesn't. I mean, what Ron Francis, I would think, is going to try to do is thread the needle, right? Where he's competitive, especially in a relatively soft division, it looks like, where you're fighting for a playoff spot without sacrificing, again, what is their greatest advantage right now, which is the financial flexibility they have, not just right now, but in the future, right? Because they can choose to be saddled with no bad long-term contracts if they choose, right? Maybe there's one or two guys that they decide to take a swing on, as we're talking about here, who have big money and term left, but they can have a very, very clean cap sheet going forward. And you got to think that rather than go all in on year one, Ron Francis is going to say, all right, we can be a competitive team in the first year, but we can also do it without impacting our ability to spend and add players in years 2, 3, 4, 5, etc.
This one comes in. Take Price in Seattle, then put him on LTIR, then bring him back for the cup run. Certainly a calculated gamble you could make that he's not going to start the season, but he's going to be something that you add throughout the course of the year. Yep, you could make that gamble. It's a hell of a game of poker that Mark Bergevin is playing, and he's playing it to a certain extent, Jamie, with Shea Weber, but boy, is he playing it with Carey Price. And a little later in the show, we're going to go to Montreal. I'm really interested to know what the reaction is there. Is it, hey, good job by Bergevin. They're not taking him off your hands, and he's done everything he can within the loopholes of this to work this to the best of his ability? Or is it, man, what happens if they do lose Carey Price? And to another texter's point earlier, like, what if Bergevin has that money to work with? Okay, you take Carey Price, and now we've got $10.5 million we can go out on the market with, and we feel pretty good about the way we've reset our cap structure. Couple that with the 7.8 Shea Weber's doing. If he doesn't play next season, Montreal suddenly has a whole bunch of money to spend.
Yeah, they all of a sudden could be one of the biggest spenders, biggest players in this offseason, again, after they were last year, right? After Marc Bergevin was so aggressive last season going out and adding pieces and ultimately leading his team to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, they potentially have a chance to reload and take some big swings of their own on this free agent market.
Man, it's going to be a fun week, and this was such a good week to get it started. And we got a couple of days to speculate, and this is the other part of the equation, Jamie. Teams look around. Like, we just had a text come in saying, hey, should Vancouver look at the unprotected list and swing a deal with Seattle to get one of those players? Yeah, Vancouver should. Other teams should. They're doing that right now, guaranteed. And we saw this with Vegas the last time around. That's what makes this week so fun. We're all going to have theories over the next couple of days as to who Ron Francis and the Kraken can take. And we're going to have theories as to how they use those assets leading up to a Friday that sees the NHL entry draft go. Like, Thursday and Friday could be wild in the National Hockey League.
The fallout is going to be incredible because, again, you look at, and I'm curious, we'll get into this more throughout the show. I mean, obviously, this is going to dominate our conversation today, Scotty, but just, you know, I think the thing, there was a lot of talk going into this expansion draft of, oh, you know, the general managers, they've learned their lesson. This isn't going to be as easy for Seattle as it was for Vegas. And we'll see how the side deal process plays out. There's still a lot of talented players available to Seattle, and it's specifically you look at the blue line, I think that's the thing that Seattle can most easily copy based on what Vegas did, right? Vegas took a ton of defensemen and then immediately flipped a whole bunch of them for picks and prospects that gave them a lot of flexibility, right? You look at who's out there on the blue line. I mean, we talked about Mark Giordano, but there's a ton of other good, in some cases, very young defensemen that Seattle could take. And again, if they take a bounty of NHL quality defensemen on Wednesday, yeah, we could see a lot of them moved Thursday, Friday before the draft.
Well, and that's part of this conversation that we're going to pick up in the coming hours of this show. You saw teams get out ahead of the expansion draft being somewhat aggressive, maybe in a case of a Vancouver. We saw other teams make deals. Teams like the Leafs went a little bit different way, and that's a different strategy that Toronto employed, saying we're actually going to add a player, so we know we're going to lose something here, but we still feel good about the way we've insulated ourselves in that position if you decide to go ahead and proceed this way. Keep those texts coming in. We've got a lot of them. We want to get into those conversation points that you're bringing up. 960, 960, 650, 650. We always have a great conversation with Donovan Bennett. And while we generally don't talk NHL, it does have me wondering, with everything that's happened over the last couple of days, whether Donovan is a little bit jealous or not, and I'll explain why next. On Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Lots of good texts coming in. Keep them coming. 960, 960 or 650, 650. Kellen in Medicine Hat, Jamie says, and yes, Jamie Dodd is co-hosting the program today as Karen enjoys an extended weekend. Good for her. Take it if you can. A lot of moving parts in the Seattle expansion, with us not knowing what side deals are being made, but Price should not be picked, says Kellen in Medicine Hat. I know Seattle has cap space, but Price's term is too long, and money prevents Seattle from having flexibility moving forward. If spending money, Landeskog or Hamilton are the ones they should go crazy on, and that's an interesting part of this as well, Jamie, and it's the unknown. And Kellen is right. Seattle has this exclusive negotiating window right now where they can talk to Gabe Landeskog and other teams can't, at least not legally. We know how those back deal conversations go, those cryptic conversations, as uncryptic as they probably are, where agents get the word out and they get sources chiming back in. But yeah, what happens with Gabe Landeskog, and can you interest him? Dougie Hamilton, what do you know about the future of getting him, and how does that affect what you might do on the back end when it comes to the expansion draft? And if you do come to those, is Carey Price out of the question? That's what makes this week so much fun.
It really does. And with especially high-profile UFAs like Dougie Hamilton and Gabe Landeskog, you wonder if the approach Seattle's going to take is, well, they're going to talk to those guys. I mean, they have this exclusive window, right? You'd be foolish not to at least talk to them and see what they think. But do you just use this window to get a sense of what they're going to ask for on July 8th, and then you take somebody else from those teams and then circle back when those guys, as we expect they're going to do, hit the open market, right? You don't necessarily have to use your selection on them, but you have an incredible opportunity to get some advanced intel. And maybe Gabe Landeskog says, I would be thrilled to start a new chapter of my career in Seattle if you give me another call on July 28th. That's an incredible advantage for Seattle.
And there's so many big names out there right now that are left unprotected, many of them because of salary concerns, if not injury concerns. Vladimir Tarasenko, as we mentioned in the opening segment, is one of them. This text says Tarasenko is a risk with that shoulder. He only played 34 out of a possible 127 games over the last two seasons. I'd invest in goaltending over superstar offense. Another texter says, shocked the Blues couldn't trade Tarasenko. Yeah, the shoulder's an issue, but he's one hell of a player. He's such an interesting gamble. And from what I read over the weekend, Jamie, and you tell me where you're at, it sounds like they could have traded Vladimir Tarasenko, but it doesn't sound like the return interested St. Louis enough at this point to make that deal. It's not as though there were no deals available. There was interest. It's just that the interest isn't to a point yet where they said, okay, let's pull the trigger. And as we both know, Jamie, these deals can go down over the next week and change. We got the entry draft coming up on Friday, which is where a lot of assets get thrown around. And then, of course, we got free agency on the 28th.
Well, and you wonder if from St. Louis's perspective, right, if any of the deals proposed were, hey, either you have to retain salary on Tarasenko or we have to give you another contract back. Maybe they looked at it and said, well, listen, if Seattle just decides to take him at full freight, that solves a problem. And if not, we'll circle back to some of those other deals later.
Donovan Bennett joins us every single Monday. He of Sportsnet. Lots going on with Donovan right now. Lots going on in the National Hockey League, and we will combine the two off the hop. Donovan, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you again for having me.
And thank you for being here with myself and Jamie today. Now, we usually deviate from the National Hockey League, but here's how I want to bring it in, because it's not as though you're not a hockey fan. You're just more diverse in your sporting interests than some of our guests here, so we like to go a bunch of different directions. But everything that's gone on in the last 48 hours, does it have you pining for expansion in other leagues? Because it's fun, man.
Totally is fun. And I think, you know, fun's the operative word when you think of the Kraken, when you think of their names, their arena, their logo and colors, and certainly the fan base that has quickly grown before a puck has been dropped. But yeah, looking at the names and the list of players that have been protected or really not protected, and imagining what some of the line combinations could look like, what the defense pairings could look like, who could be in goal, and really if they wanted to allocate the resources, they could have a goalie room with a bunch of really talented players. I don't think that'll be the case, but I think you're holding your breath if you were from La Belle Province and you're a Montreal Habs fan and thinking, it's not possible that we could lose Carey Price. We didn't get too cute here by not protecting them, did we? Even though there's uncertainty, obviously, with the knee moving forward, could we lose Carey Price and Shea Weber, given, you know, how important they were to our cup run? And that's just the conversations that's happening with one franchise. When you look at that across the league, it's great that we're having real hockey conversations in the middle of July, and it's great that no matter where they go, no matter what direction, and obviously we know there's probably going to be some side deals made to make sure that some players who are not protected stay, you know, with their home franchises, that the Kraken have the chance to be Kraken pretty quickly. They're going to be a good hockey team, and we've seen how good Vegas was right away. And I think Seattle is going to be much the same. So, yeah, it is fascinating and making me, I guess, salivate a little bit for expansion in some other sports, because gone is your grandfather's expansion, or really, if we're being honest, my and your expansion when we were kids, when expansion teams sucked. And they sucked for a long time. It was not fun to be a fan of the Toronto Raptors or Vancouver Grizzlies early, or the Seattle Mariners or Toronto Blue Jays early. And so now that the expansion has some real intrigue across the league, but also it means that there's going to be another team that is pretty competitive right off the bat. Yeah, I love it.
which is what never happened in the NBA. But we all know that the NFL could expand in a heartbeat if it wanted to, but you're going to have to give it a really good reason to do so because it's just a money-making operation. Major League Baseball seems more fit for relocation with a couple franchises than it does for expansion. But the NBA, we've all been wondering, and we've all been waiting for quite some time. I do get the sense that if the NBA in the next few years decides to expand again, they won't make some of the mistakes they made in the mid-90s with the Raptors and the Grizzlies and handcuffing them early. I think Adam Silver would take a different approach, don't you?
I think no question. And I think actually, to be honest, David Stern, you know, in his late life, in his late role as commissioner, said as much himself and said that they got Toronto wrong, but the ability for the fan base to overcome it, but they really, really got Vancouver wrong. And obviously, you know, that's one of his regrets. So I think they could, you know, retroactively have some reparations to Canadian basketball fans if they were able to put a team back in Canada and do it properly. And I actually think that the game has got to a place where you could expand quite easily without watering down the product, which is really the concern for most leagues when you talk about expansion, and was a real issue for the MLS when it, over a period of time, expanded too quickly. And I say that because of the rise of the sport internationally. We have so many superstars coming to the NBA, not from America, not even really from North America, but from abroad. Africa is thriving with basketball players that can play right away. Historically, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 players from Europe. Now there's a couple great European players on every team. So I think because there is more access to high-level talent, we could broaden the amount of teams that we have in the NBA without issue. And I actually think that you could make the argument that the game would be better if we had expansion, because then it would, by default, space out some of the superstars and get away from some of the clustering of superstars that we have now with certain franchises, and making sure that the scales are a bit better balanced. And so I think it wouldn't be a stressor or a pain point if the NBA expanded. I think it might be win-win for competitive balance, for the fans, and for the product overall.
Well, and Donovan, you know, I want to talk to you in just a second about that growth of international basketball talent. The U.S. men's team is in danger of finding out all about that, and we'll get into that. But, you know, just thinking about the expansion and the potential expansion process in the NBA, I mean, the NBA offseason in a normal year is almost impossible to follow, and the drama is sometimes even greater than what we see in the regular season. I mean, would we even be able to handle an NBA expansion process, you know, given the how much of the backroom drama now plays out on social media in the NBA?
No, it would be it would be so tough to follow on Twitter, online, in Instagram comments with players going back and forth and weighing in, agents leaking information and rumors and in backroom deals. Free agency, as you know, is a full year, 365-day sport or event. Kawhi Leonard signed a deal that could be, depending on how he opts in or out, 2 or 3 years. But there was already talk immediately after he signed on what that meant for his next deal and his next location. So if you talk about adding expansion, another wrinkle to the chess piece that is, you know, free agency at large and in the draft, and how that manipulates what GMs and presidents can do with their roster, it would be fascinating to see how teams approached it. But also, you would have many NBA players who, unlike hockey players who think collectively and talk about the group, you'd have many NBA players in their feelings if they were not protected. And it would certainly be an issue of how is this guy protected over me, so on and so forth. Much of the money that NBA players make is dictated based off of the market and based off of collective bargaining agreement. But how you're treated in your organization is entirely different. So I would love to see the drama if the Philadelphia 76ers protected Joel Embiid but didn't protect Ben Simmons, for example. These are the types of things that make NBA Twitter amazing, and ultimately sometimes the culture and reality TV-ness around the NBA is more fascinating, fun, than the actual games. And so if we did have expansion the way you're describing, it would ratchet up all of those things to the 10th degree.
Yeah, I can only imagine what Kevin Durant would have to say. I mean, he would be protected, but just what he would have to say on Twitter about the entire expansion process. It would be more than worth it, in my opinion. And speaking of Kevin Durant, he's a member of the U.S. men's basketball team going to the Olympics. Now, they got the win against Spain yesterday. They had a big second half after struggling early, but they do have two exhibition losses leading up to the tournament. They're playing shorthanded. You talked about it. The growth of international basketball talent around the world has been incredible. How worried should this version of the U.S. men's basketball team be before the Tokyo Games?
I should be pretty worried. I mean, Nigeria is a thriving basketball nation, certainly. Shout out to Canadian Caleb Agata, who was a force in youth sports and now is killing it in basketball in Israel and has got himself a summer NBA invite to Summer League. But is not someone anyone expected to be crossing up Bradley Beal and pouring in points for four quarters. Much of the talented Nigerian players, for example, are players who were born and raised in North America who have parents of Nigerian descent and thus are playing for Team Nigeria. But if they had their druthers, they would be playing for Team USA or Team Canada, so on and so forth. But they weren't good enough to make those rosters. So the fact that the United States lost to that team, I think, it's probably an aberration, but still a warning sign. But I think the fact that they lost to Australia is not an aberration, because Patty Mills is an entirely different player internationally than he is in the NBA. That core of that group, an Australia team without Ben Simmons, by the way, is really good and has played together, not just for a couple weeks like Team USA or a couple months like some of the other teams that will be playing in the Olympics. They played together for years, and they've come up together at the club level, many of them, and youth scouting opportunities as they were trying either to get to the NCAA or get to the NBA, and they played in the same system, played in the same culture. And so that is not unique to them. There are many nations now where that is the case. The Spanish and Argentinian golden generations are a little bit long in the tooth and old, and so they may not be the same threat, but to think that the United States is just going to take whichever 12 to 15 NBA players feel like it makes sense for their brand to be on the Olympic stage for that summer, and they're going to come home with gold, is not realistic anymore. And so I have real questions on how the team's put together. No real true, pass first point guard, no real true bigs and really big depth. All of their bigs are kind of bigs that play small. And so in a, you lose in a tough situation and could go home scenario, I don't want to say I worry about Team USA because I'm not really invested on them winning a gold or not, but I do think they should be worried. Ultimately, the high-end talent is so supreme, they should win. But we've seen historically that winning an international medal is not just about who has the most talent, and that the international game is fundamentally different than the NBA game. And some of those talents don't transfer to the international game in the same way. So, yeah, when you don't bring your best at this point in the evolution of the sport, you can certainly get beat. And this United States team is far from their best.
Greece didn't have its best because Giannis was still playing in the playoffs, and he continues to. Donovan Bennett joining us here, as he does early every week on the Rintoul and Sermon Show, today with Jamie Dodd. Let's talk about Giannis. Let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. If they get the job done tomorrow at home, they've got two shots at this, but let's say they get it done on Tuesday. What does it mean for Giannis's status among NBA superstars, and what does it mean for the NBA and its small market teams?
It would be an affirmation of both, right? How many people, myself included, said Giannis has got to get out of there. He's got to get out of Milwaukee. That this Drew Holiday trade, it's nice, but they really mortgaged the future and their bench to get it done. And if they don't win, then what? That, they have a coach that really looks like he's trying to fill out an Excel spreadsheet every time he has to make a big decision on the sidelines. He kind of looks confused and under pressure and not confident in what he's doing. And they've got a superstar in Giannis who is an out-of-this-world talent. And the nickname Freak is an appropriate one. He is a physical freak, but fundamentally he's somewhat limited in a postseason scenario where you know the tendencies, you've got advanced scouting on just that team, and you can make adjustments in game that you maybe wouldn't be able to make in the regular season because of the amount of data you have, that the teams are able to make him literally play left-handed and he doesn't have another way to win. And we've seen that he's played within himself. He's figured out he's not going to take the I dare you three-point shots. He's going to use that space to collapse the paint. He's going to get the opposing bigs into foul trouble. And that, yeah, he's going to take all 10 seconds at the free throw line, even if it's awkward, and hopefully he makes more than he misses. And thus far, it's worked, and they've made the appropriate adjustments from the first two games, and now they're rolling. So I think it would be an affirmation, to be honest, in his ability to overcome his weaknesses with his strengths, and it would be an affirmation that, yes, Milwaukee, you can do it. This is not the days where you have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and you have Oscar Robertson, but you lose them because you're not a huge market. You lose Ray Allen because you can never get over the hump. You've had a star. You paid him. You put players around him, and you were able to get it done. And so, you know, all of the other small markets in the NBA, whether it's Indiana or Sacramento, who've been in this perpetual purgatory of not being bad enough really to have access to a great player via the draft, but also not being good enough to say, hey, we're 1-2 players away, come to our market because the market is small and not that appealing, they would say, okay, Milwaukee did it. And they did it through the draft and with development. Both Giannis and Chris Middleton, they were not high lottery picks. They were players that other people could have had. They took them with a real vision as to who they'd become. And now in this moment, we're seeing that vision play out in front of our eyes.
What's the defining play of the NBA Finals to this point for you?
Wow. It's got to be the last play that meant anything that we saw. Devin Booker, you know, trying to channel his Kobe, trying to get his hero ball on, and the Milwaukee Bucks understanding, again, they've made the adjustment that no one else in Phoenix has the ability to take and make a big shot in clutch time, and Booker's going to want to put it on his back, as he should. He's been so hot, but Jrue Holiday comes from the weak side, creates the steal, and then they dared to be great. They could have just tried to dribble out of the clock, get fouled, go to the free throw line. They said, let's finish this right now. And for many, it was an ill-advised. I thought it was a daring and a winning play rather than being negative and trying to just, you know, run out the time and playing four corners. Through the alley-oop up to Giannis. And not only did Giannis go get it, but Chris Paul made the ill-advised decision to foul and not get out of the way, and thus they got an extra point when Phoenix would have had the ball and it still would have been a one-score game. That was a defining play because it showed Giannis his physical greatness in a clutch moment, shows Jrue Holiday and why they signed him, because he's so sound defensively and so smart on both ends of the floor. And it showed us that Chris Paul, who I called on this very segment a couple weeks ago, the point guard, in a big spot, making another dumb decision, something that we've seen really far too often in the last three games. And so for me, that play has been a microcosm of how this series has really shifted in Milwaukee's favor.
Donovan, just before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about Chris Paul. And as you said, those gaffes in big moments we've seen over the last few games. Coming into this series, I mean, Chris Paul was one of the best stories of the playoffs, right? He was finally getting his recognition as the point god, as you say. Are these bad decisions in big moments in the finals going to end up overshadowing his incredible performances earlier in the playoffs?
Probably, because it is a what have you done for me lately culture, and we will remember how the NBA season and finals ended, and not how they began, or really how the playoffs began. And this is the part that I'm struggling, and I would love your help with it, both of you, to give me some guidance. I want to say knee-jerk reaction, well, the moment's just too big for him. He's never been to this spot in the postseason before, so clearly, you know, he's starting to choke. The end of the season, long season, he's had injury issues. He's getting tired and wearing down. But in game one, he was arguably the best player on the floor, and it was a Chris Paul celebration on Twitter for this is what he means and he's such a winner, and I was part of it. So did all of that change in 7, 8, 9 days? Did he get that tired that quickly? Did he become someone who couldn't deal with the pressure when he dealt with it in game one of the finals, which was the first time he's been in that situation? And he dealt with it closing out the last couple series in massive spots. So unless the sprained wrist is much more than sprained, I'm having a hard time putting my finger on what exactly is going on with him. But even the injury wouldn't explain some of the mental mistakes that he's making. So many of these errors that Chris Paul's making in these big games are unforced errors, if we were talking about tennis. And so I'm interested to see how he returns serve in game six, but it's been so, so confusing to watch.
Yeah, it has. And it's a combination of a number of factors from my vantage point. Some of it is pressing a little bit. He knows this is probably his last chance to get something done, so he's pressing a little. Sometimes great players don't play their best. It's that. And hey, Milwaukee's defense, we're talking about the defining play of the series being the Jrue Holiday steal and the accompanying lob. We're also talking about Giannis getting up to block eight. And like, Milwaukee has played hard, and they've played hard on Chris Paul as well. I think you factor all of those in, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Donovan, we always appreciate the conversation, man. We never get to all of our stuff, which means we're going to have extra for next week. Thank you very much. Have a great week, and we'll do this again in 7 days' time.
Will do. Can't wait. Thanks, fellas.
That is Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. You see him across Sportsnet television. He's on every single platform. Jamie, we've got some news out of the National Hockey League on a couple of fronts this morning, and we will get it to our listeners next right here on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
There's been a lot going on in the last 48 hours in the National Hockey League, and we're going to try to get to as much of it as we can throughout the course of this show. Your texts came fast and furious in the first hour. We want to build them into the program. Keep them coming at 960, 960, 650, 650. So, yes, the names Jason Dickinson and Adam Larson and Mark Giordano, they're going to come up again throughout the course of the show. We want you in on those conversations. But we also have to make way, Jamie. Jamie Dodd is in for Karen Sermon, who's taking the day off today. Jamie, we also have to make way for news that is coming out in the here and now. While we've been really pouring into some of the big stories of the weekend, here is the latest from the National Hockey League when it comes to the Olympics. The NHL schedule coming out on Thursday. We all know what a big week this is for the NHL. It's going to include an Olympic break, but that doesn't mean that players are necessarily going to the Olympics.
It's very interesting, and this is reported by, I saw it first from Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, that, yeah, they're going to build in this break, but they're stopping short of saying that they're going, right? There's no guarantee they still have to iron out these issues with the IOC. If, like me, you're hoping for NHL players to go to the Olympics, though, I mean, I think you have to see this as a positive step, right? They're not closing the door. If they had released a schedule that didn't include an Olympic break, you know, because then if you want to change it later, it's really, really hard to build that break in. That would have been a very bad sign. So this, it's not a guarantee, but it's hopeful, I think. It's fair to see it as a hopeful sign if you're hoping players will be at the Olympics.
You know what else it is, Jamie? It's putting the onus back on the players. And I don't say that in any way that the NHL is trying to create something acrimonious here. But this is the NHL saying, we're living up to our end of the bargain. We told you guys last year when you said it was important to you that we would make it happen for you. Here is a schedule that makes it happen for you, but you still need to be comfortable to go. It's not our place to negotiate all of your insurance costs. We want to know that we don't have to pay for everything here, but you guys still need to broker a deal with the IIHF, with the IOC, whoever needs to be contacted to figure out what COVID insurance looks like, to figure out if there's going to be any type of compensation coming your way. We'll be in on that, but we're not the driving force behind it. You guys need to be.
And the NHL has used, you know, whether it's Bill Daly or Gary Bettman speaking to the media in recent weeks, they've used the phrase good faith repeatedly, right? Saying, hey, when we negotiated this last CBA with the players, this was done in good faith, and we're going to stand by that commitment. And again, it doesn't mean they're going to push, they're going to be the main drivers for it, but they're not going to get in the way either. And this is, as you say, this is an example of them not getting in the way. They negotiated this would be possible, and now they're showing the players, yep, it's possible if everything else falls into line.
Scott Rentoul, it's Jamie Dodd. There is another significant announcement that has come in the hockey world today. This is big. And hopefully, it's a significant step toward this type of announcement not being a big deal sooner rather than later. We saw this recently in the National Football League. We now have it in hockey. It is not with an active NHL player, but it's with an active NHL draft pick. Nashville Predators prospect. He's a third rounder from last year's draft. He is a Calgary Hitmen defenseman. Luke Prokop announced on social media today that he is gay. Jamie, this is something he has been weighing for quite some time. There are many quotes out there right now for Luke Prokop, and everything I've seen so far on social media has been from fellow players, from organizations, from fans around the game saying, we support you. This is a big deal today. Now, it's not an active NHL player, but it's someone who's on the precipice of becoming an NHL player.
And it's someone who's in the NHL system, so to speak, right? He's a WHL player, but he's been drafted. He's a part of the Nashville Predators organization. And, you know, as we're learning more about the story and how the process unfolded, he talked to the Predators. He talked to David Boyle. They were immediately extremely supportive. I've seen quotes from Roman Josi, the Predators captain, today. Again, just putting his support 100%. Behind Prokop. So that's really good to see. And yes, as you say, not an NHL player, but a future NHL player quite easily could be a future NHL player.
There will be some. You know this, Jamie. We will see it at some point in our text message inbox. What's the big deal? This isn't a story move. No, it's a story. It's a story right now. And I hope that those are predictive texts, that it won't be a big deal right now. But because it hasn't happened before, and because we're talking about someone who is on the verge of making a National Hockey League career out of it, not someone who's at the other end of the spectrum where the career is over, and that doesn't make it less courageous. It just makes it different. Until we have more of this, until there is wider acceptance, it remains a very big story, and it is today.
It is a big story, and I think also, you know, I mean, Scott, we've had a lot of conversations over the almost 2 years that we've been doing this show. We've had a lot of conversations on this show about, you know, the broad umbrella term of hockey culture, right? And what's good about it and what still needs to improve. And, you know, I think if we're going to have those conversations about how can it get better, how can it be more welcoming for everyone, it's also kind of incumbent on us to talk about an example of it being very welcoming for people, right? Like, you got to talk about the good news as well. And this is good news. And the way the NHL world and the hockey world is reacting is very good news.
Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick, you all know this. They put together 31 Thoughts, the podcast, which is released multiple times throughout the course of the week. And the latest episode is going to drop in less than 2 hours. And it includes an interview with Luke Prokop, who went on the podcast and did an interview, and we have select clips. So we're going to hear from Prokop himself. Again, a Nashville Predators prospect. He was drafted last year in the third round. He is a Calgary Hitmen defenseman. Here is Prokop on coming out in hockey.
When I had talked to my friends and my family, my agents about this, they always were just worrying about hockey and how I wanted to do it and how I wanted to, if I was going to come out, if I was going to keep it private. And the one thing I had always told them is that having a career with, you know, 3 Stanley Cups and a Norris Trophy and all these records is amazing and something that, you know, I'm hopeful in wanting to do. But I would rather play one game or 2 games in the NHL and create a lasting difference or a lasting change, have some sort of impact on the game that goes beyond the ice. So that's something that kind of has been my goal and is kind of one of the main reasons in why I want to come out, you know, in hockey.
What an incredible perspective from a 19-year-old, Jamie. Part of the barrier for athletes in the past with not being able to disclose their sexuality as it differed from what they felt was the norm is that they believed it would be a hurdle between them and 3 Stanley Cups or a Norris Trophy or this incredible Hall of Fame career. So I better protect myself from that. And you've got a young man here saying that would be great, but this would be bigger and it would be a bigger legacy. And he's just 19 years old. It's incredible to hear.
Yeah, it's a really impressive perspective. I know we're going to hear a little bit more from Prokop shortly, but everything I've heard so far from him has been impressive, again, to use that word again. Just incredibly, incredibly impressive from him. The perspective, the courage, the wisdom that he is already showing that we're learning about today is just incredible.
Here's another clip from Luke Prokop talking about when he decided he would let Nashville in on this and he wanted to disclose this to Nashville. Here's what he had to say. This, again, from 31 Thoughts, the podcast. The full edition will be released later today.
That feeling of having Nashville support me was something I hadn't felt before. Honestly, it felt like I could do anything. Like having that support for them, knowing that they still support me and believe in me and just want to treat me as me and as a hockey player. Like they drafted me as a hockey player. They didn't draft me. They didn't know beforehand that I was gay. So they drafted me as a hockey player, and to know that they still believe me, even though there's some people in the world that, you know, don't accept this or, you know, think it's a choice. It was an amazing feeling.
And there's another quote, Jamie. I won't say a clip because I don't know what is remaining in the 31 Thoughts podcast interview, but I've seen a quote from him today in one of the pieces I've read where he said, when I was on the phone and they told me how supportive they were going to be and how accepting they were, he said, I was in my car and I was wearing sunglasses, but I had tears streaming down my face and I was wearing sunglasses because I didn't want people to see me crying. And once I got off the phone, I just turned up the music full blast and I was so happy. I was banging on the steering wheel. It was a really vivid description of what that meant to him.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's just so cool to hear. And again, the way he's handling it is fantastic. Being so open about the process and the emotion and the challenges and all of that. You know, one of the things we talked about this when Carl Nassib came out in the NFL, right? Like a big part of why it is such a big deal still is because it can help pave the way for people in the future. And I think you look at how Luke Prokop is handling it, that is going to do so much for other people who might be considering this decision, whether they're in the NHL now or whether they're coming up through the CHL or whatever the case may be. Him kind of charting this course and showing that it can be done and giving people a sense for how it's going to go and what it's going to be like, it's a massive, massive deal.
Someone texted in, well, therein lies the problem, guys. As long as we keep talking about it and making it a story, then it'll always be a story. I disagree. The more we talk about it, the more that we find out there are gay people playing every single sport in every single industry. And it changes the way people behave. It changes the understanding. I'm going to give you a quote from Luke Prokop. And I waited to share this one until now, Jamie. He talked about hockey's culture. There's still a lot to do. He heard things in the dressing room over the years. And if you've been in any dressing room, certainly a male-dominated dressing room, like I've been in, you've been in over the years in various sports, Jamie, you've heard homophobic slurs. Absolutely. And a lot of you out there have probably used them over the years before you had a better understanding. I know growing up, I said things, Jamie, you probably said things without an understanding of the impact. You didn't think much of it. Oh, that's not what I meant. Here's a quote from Prokop. It was definitely difficult. I was guilty of it sometimes too, he says. No one's perfect. I would make the odd comment too. That was probably offside. It was when I started playing in Calgary and noticed the locker room banter and I thought about, what if I did come out? Some of my teammates who were saying these words that were offensive to our community and stuff, would they be accepting or would they not want to be my teammate anymore? Would they be uncomfortable playing with me? This will have a direct impact on that locker room and hopefully on many other locker rooms around junior hockey, professional hockey, every level of hockey, I hope.
Well, and you hope that it also encourages teams, not just at the NHL level, but also especially in some ways at the junior level, at the collegiate level, to get proactive about this stuff, right? Because everything we've heard is that the Calgary Hitmen and his teammates are being extremely supportive, but you know, if you were running a junior hockey team, you don't want to be putting a person like Prokop in that position where he's wondering how it's going to go, right? I think you want to proactively create the environment where a player like Prokop can know in advance, hey, I know this is the type of organization that's going to have my back. And you hope that, again, teams around hockey, across hockey at all different levels are going to start taking that more seriously.
It's a story. It's going to continue to be one for the next little while. And then hopefully this becomes much more regular and go, oh, okay, no big deal. And we are able to have less conversations about it than we are right now because there is a much more accepting environment. And in too many places, there isn't that right now. That is the reality of the situation. Let's get to what they're saying. Current Washington Capitals defenseman Brendan Dillon set to join us in less than 20 minutes' time. Don't go anywhere. He was left unprotected. He's been through this before. His view on the expansion draft and much more coming up at the bottom of this hour. We led the show with it today, Jamie. No surprise. It's what everyone's talking about in the hockey world over the last 48 hours. It's Carey Price being left unprotected. Should they or shouldn't they in Seattle? There are good cases to be made on both sides. Eric Engels, who we've had on this program many times, had this to say about the Carey Price situation with the expansion draft and what's really going on right now.
I think this is a really high-stakes game of poker. I think there's posturing on both sides going on, to be honest with you. I think Seattle wants Montreal to feel that they're absolutely going to take Carey Price. I think Montreal wants Seattle to feel as though that might not be the best decision. I think Seattle is doing that because they want to force Mark Bergevin to give something up to keep Carey Price protected, which is what they were trying to do with Jake Allen also. And I think that, you know, I'm not entirely sure where this is going, but I think in the end, what is most likely here is that, you know, the Kraken had to be looking at this situation and saying, look, you know, Carey Price is turning 34 in a week. He's got 5 years left at a $10.5 million cap hit. Forget about the bonus money and all that, because as I wrote at sportsnet.ca, yeah, he's owed $44 million, but the minute they grab him in the expansion draft, they'll make that up in the merchandising rather quickly. You know, this is about the cap. This is about an aging goaltender who, yes, was at the pinnacle just a few weeks ago and just a few games from winning the Stanley Cup. But that contract is not going to get better as we move along. And he's had serious injuries, you know, virtually every year for the last 8 or 9. So, you know, there's a lot of risk in that. And then when the reports come out that he potentially needs hip surgery, potentially needs knee surgery, you know, no matter who's putting them out there and what the incentive is, there's complete validity to those reports. We knew that he was playing with something earlier in the year prior to suffering the concussion. You know, it's a lot of risk to take on for a franchise that doesn't really need to take on that risk. You know, I think the tenor of the conversation in Seattle, based on sources I was speaking with over the weekend, was, how do we not take this guy, right? Like, he's available. He's the marquee player on the list that's available to us, and he could serve as the face of the franchise. It would be good business for several reasons. You know, how do we steer clear of that, knowing all we know about the risks? And I just think now it's become riskier for them to call the Canadiens and Bergevin's bluff. And, you know, sometimes you know someone's bluffing or you feel as though they are, and you don't have the cards to really call it, and you just have to lay it down. And I don't know where this goes from here definitively, but I believe that the Kraken are going to try and get Montreal to give something up to ensure that Carey Price doesn't get selected. And I don't know if they'll be successful in that bid, because I don't believe they're going to get the entire picture here before they have to make their selection. They're not going to know what Carey Price's specialist has to say, because we won't know that until later in the week.
It's a fascinating conversation. I am so curious to see what Seattle does with this, Jamie. The best advice I ever got when I was purchasing a property for the first time from my real estate agent, who was great, he said, you've got to come to an offer when you're making one that leaves you happy if you have it accepted and happy if you don't have it accepted because you weren't willing to pay more. And that, to me, would seem to be where Mark Bergevin is at. This is a calculated gamble. We know what Carey Price has represented to that franchise, and I'm sure in the perfect world, Carey Price would be healthy and finish his career as a lifelong Habs fan, or a lifelong Hab, I should say, and keep leading his team to playoff victories. But there's also the, okay, if we lose him here, we have $10.5 million to play with.
Yeah, and Bergevin, there's probably a part of Bergevin that, not that he wants Seattle to take Carey Price, but there's probably part of him that's thinking, man, I could have a lot of fun this offseason with that $10.5 million of cap space that would free up, right? As you say, there's a bright side to both possibilities for Montreal. And it almost reminds me of, like, if you're somebody who's in a job that you kind of like but aren't crazy about, and you get laid off, and it's like, well, all right, but now I can go do something else, you know? And it's like, yeah, they wouldn't be happy if they lost Carey Price, but it would free up a lot of other opportunities for them too.
Yeah, and because of the flat cap and the financial constraints that teams find themselves under this time around, we didn't really see this the last time around with Vegas, did we? We didn't really see the, okay, I dare you to take him.
Nope.
He's a really good player, but there's a lot of money owed here.
That's probably the biggest difference between how teams approached it this time versus the Vegas time, right? Is they left a lot more good players, really good players, in some cases, you know, players that have a long history with that team, but are just making a lot of money. They're calling Seattle's bluff a little bit, daring them to take these big high-ticket players. And you got to think part of that is because they know there's only so many of these guys Seattle can take, right? So you're putting, collectively, the NHL has put a lot of them on the table, but the general managers individually know Seattle can't take all of them. So you're rolling the dice a little bit, hoping that they'll choose to go a different direction rather than your high-priced veteran.
A lot of poker being played around the NHL, not just with Montreal, with other teams. Do they want to cut side deals? Don't they? Deals that many soccer fans would like to see brokered in Western Canada include that for the 2026 World Cup. We talked about this in the last couple of weeks, that all of a sudden the province of BC, not an about face, but a different attitude than a few years ago when it said, we're not in the running to host games. We don't need to be a part of it. That has changed. In fact, the Premier of British Columbia confirmed that today. He was on Sportsnet 650. Here's what John Horgan had to say about the possibility of World Cup games coming to Vancouver in 2026.
Well, as you know, FIFA expressed interest in Vancouver, of course, reciprocated back in 2017, 2018 about hosting a couple of games. And at that time, of course, cities were lining up, Chicago, Montreal, Edmonton have all changed their tune. There could be others. Those are the ones that are top of mind for me. And so I was approached by a FIFA representative a while back and asked if the position of the province was the same as it was back in 2018. And I had to say, of course, we're in a completely different situation. We've been through a year and a half of disruption to our tourism economy. We've seen enormous challenges that you guys know full well, your listeners know full well. They've lived those challenges. And so the prospect of utilizing our publicly owned stadium, which has just been refurbished a few years back, as you guys know, for hundreds of millions of dollars, to use that facility to welcome the world to British Columbia and Vancouver in 2026 is a much better idea today than it was in 2018. And similarly, the opportunities, I think FIFA will not be looking for the sea and the sky in their ask from host cities as well. So I think the negotiation is in a better place, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I know sports fans in British Columbia will be as well, but it's not a blank check, and there were some pretty outrageous demands back in 2018. If they're still on the table, then we're not going to make a lot of progress. But we're in conversation. I think that's a good thing.
Seems to be pointing in the right direction, Jamie. Certainly nowhere near being a fait accompli. He went on in the interview to say, like, one of the challenges they had with FIFA's demands when they were talking about this the first time around was commitment to the hospitality sector, where FIFA said, well, part of this is we get to come in and we get to book up a bunch of hotels, and then if we don't need them, we can just kind of release them prior to the event. And that seemed to be a non-starter. This looks like it has everything to do with the tourism industry, as we've expected, or as we've expanded on before. And of course, just trying to get something else coming to this part of the world that has never been here before.
Yeah, and it's interesting because both the BC government and, you would think, FIFA, they each have a little bit of an extra interest and incentive to make this work now, right? Of course, with Montreal pulling out of hosting games. So, you know, not that FIFA is desperate all of a sudden to come to Vancouver, but it probably makes them maybe a little bit more willing to be flexible. And you could say the same thing on the side of the BC government, right? You add that up, it seems like a recipe to get a deal done and to get those games in Vancouver in 2026.
Scott Rentoul, it's Jamie Dodd, and in moments we will be joined by someone who's waiting to find out if he's headed to Seattle. Brendan Dillon played his junior hockey there. He's from the province of BC, so it would be a homecoming of sorts. He He's a Washington Capital currently. Will he be in just over 48 hours? Let's talk to him. You'll hear him in just a minute on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Carey Price is the only one who knows. He's the only one who has the certainty out there right now. The rest, including our next guest, they're not quite sure. I'm Scott Rintoul, Jamie Dodd, jumping in the co-host chair again today. And I'm talking about where he's going to play next season, Jamie. Carey Price knows it's going to be one of two places if he plays, barring him deciding otherwise. Brendan Dillon's going to join us in just a couple minutes, and this comes on the heels of a Vladimir Tarasenko report out there, and many of us have speculated about this, Jamie, that, hey, maybe Seattle picks up Vladimir Tarasenko because there are interested teams, and boy, are there a lot more interested teams if Seattle's willing to take on some of that cap hit in moving him elsewhere. Vladimir Tarasenko at 7.5? I'm not sure. Vladimir Tarasenko at less than 4? Sign me up to take that chance, a lot of other teams would say. And this is the other part of this that's fascinating. Okay, there's the original selection, but then how much of it does Seattle actually keep?
Yeah, and how many guys do they immediately turn around and try to flip to other teams? And again, we talked about it earlier in the show. We saw that with defensemen, specifically with Vegas. You know, you look at a veteran, dependable defenseman like Brendan Dillon, who we're going to speak to in a few minutes here. But I mean, I think he would be a very attractive trade target if Seattle decided to take him and then shop him around the league.
And he's been through this before, and obviously it was Vegas last time around. And I can only imagine where he's at, and I'm really interested to hear from him, thinking, okay, well, if Seattle takes me, Seattle takes me. And I've lived in that city and I've played in that city and it's close to home. And I get to do something that very few players in the history of this league have had a chance to do. Start on the ground floor with a brand new team and all of the excitement that comes with it. And we all saw what happened with Vegas. Oh, but wait, I guess they could trade me. So there's that, like trying to wrap your mind around that or trying to get away from it. I can't even imagine what these couple of days are like, Jamie.
Oh, man, it must be very, very stressful for a player, right? And I'm sure we'll get into this with Brendan when we talk to him, but I can only imagine the frequency of communication between you and your agent and how often the agent is talking to Ron Francis and the general manager of your current team and maybe other GMs out there to see if there'd be interest in the trade market. Like, phones are buzzing constantly all around the NHL right now.
And Chris from Nanaimo is one who's chimed in. I just read the Kraken plan to select Tarasenko, then flip him. There's speculation that's what they could do, Chris, as opposed to, hey, this is what they're doing. Do you think the Canucks would be a fit? What do you think it would cost? It'll all depend on salary retention. How much of the contract is Seattle willing to take on? And with every, I don't know, Jamie, $500,000, name your figure, yep, the price goes up. And what are you willing to pay for cost certainty with a high-end player who needs a change of scenery and will be motivated to prove he's still got it?
And just, you know, again, it all depends on so much, you know, whether Seattle would even choose to go that route. Just at first blush, you know, I don't see that as necessarily a fit for the Canucks. Just imagining the type of assets they would have to give back to Seattle there, I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense.
Vancouver obviously moved an asset on the weekend, traded a third rounder to the Dallas Stars to get Jason Dickinson in the fold, then protected him, lines up, or at least on the projected depth chart, as the third line center next season. Brendan Dillon, currently a Capitals defenseman. We might still be saying that later this week. We might not. He joins us here today on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. Brendan, thank you very much for making the time. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, guys?
We are very well. You've been through this before. You were with San Jose. There was the Vegas expansion draft. You were left unprotected. What's this week like?
I know. I'd like to think I'm a veteran of the expansion draft. I don't know how many, what the record for most that guys have gone through, but two seems like more than enough, I think, for someone in their career. And it's a bit of a, you know, exciting time, stressful time. I'm sure everyone's just, there's so many different things to read into or not listen to or make up the most and millions of mock drafts that you can do. And, you know, for a player, you're just continuing in the off season to kind of just work on yourself, work on your game, and see how the chips kind of fall.
Have you allowed yourself to think about the possibility to returning to the city that you played junior in with the Seattle Thunderbirds?
Well, you gotta, again, you run through all those different scenarios and what can happen, what could happen. You know, I signed last summer for 4 years thinking that I'd be able to, you know, be a Capital and hopefully win a Stanley Cup here and, you know, be a big part of this team. And with what's happened over the last, you know, couple of years now with Seattle being an expansion franchise, I think any player that's not on the protected list that came out yesterday, you know, it's a real thing. I think especially even on the Capitals, there's four or five guys that I think for all of them, if any one of them was to get selected, I'd be like, hey, there's a great player going that way. And I think every team, a lot of teams are in that situation where you're going to lose a good player with no way. It's a defenseman, a forward, a goalie. And again, Seattle is definitely was a big part of my hockey career, a big part of my, you know, 16 through 20 year old growing age. I had an awesome experience there for 4 years, some good teams and great fans and a good building and great city close to home. So there's definitely a lot of different factors for sure.
Vegas is a great and exciting city. So there was that on the table the last time this happened. Nobody saw this type of success coming so quickly for the Vegas Golden Knights. Has that changed your view and perhaps the view of your colleagues on expansion and what it means to be part of an expansion team should that happen?
Well, I think it has to. And seeing how, even looking at the players that are available around the league after yesterday, there's some pretty darn good hockey players. And the success, I mean, being in San Jose, I played against Vegas for, you know, two straight years in the playoffs and saw how big of a powerhouse they were. And I think when you go to a team in the past, the expansions, whether that was Nashville, Columbus, Minnesota, it was kind of the mindset, oh, I don't want to go there. They're going to be, you know, frustrating or not great for the first couple of years. And I think for a lot of us as hockey players, we're wired. We want to win. We want to be a part of a competing team. And I think that's the something that's kind of in Vegas's DNA from day one was that competitive workman-like mentality. And I'm sure as the guys get into the Seattle locker room and it ramps up, you're going to have a bit of a chip on your shoulder, whoever those players are. And I'm sure it'll be an exciting time for sure.
You know, Brendan, you mentioned, and I know a lot of fans were fairly surprised to see some big names, really high quality players, unprotected guys like Tarasenko, Price, Giordano in Calgary. I mean, does it make it a little bit easier to deal with being unprotected when you see that, you know, you're on a list with some really, really good hockey players right now?
Yeah, I think for some players, I'm sure it could be a little bit of, you know, it could be tough on the confidence, but you got to just realize, hey, there's a lot of good players in our league. And I think even for a good amount of teams, it wasn't necessarily they weren't protecting the best players, but we're living in a COVID world where the cap is going to be the same for the next however many years. And, you know, it's sometimes I think taking the player that's making a little bit less, that's maybe going to sacrifice a goal or two just so they can, a team can maybe focus on a different area of their team that is maybe higher on the whatever situation they're looking for, and different GMs and teams approached it different ways. You can clearly tell by their protection lists, age, again, contract status and where that's at, where guys are at in their career. There's a whole bunch of different things that came into it. And by no means should anybody be butthurt that they're not protected if they are, because, you know, if you're in the NHL, you're doing something right.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned obviously you're from the Vancouver area, the Pacific Northwest. You played your junior hockey in Seattle, so you would have a certain level of comfort presumably going to play in Seattle. But from your discussions with other guys around the league, you know, do players in general see Seattle as a pretty desirable place to go and play hockey?
Well, I mean, since I left Seattle, you know, 9-10 years ago, I've been selling it as a pretty darn good hockey city. You know, when the kind of discussions around where the expansion was going to be in 2018 and Seattle was in the mix, just an amazing city. You're in geographically in a great spot with the division that they're going to be in. Travel shouldn't be too crazy. You think about from the way of living. I mean, I was very fortunate to have an amazing billet family for 4 years where, you know, the ocean, the lakes, the things to do between the Mariners, the Seahawks, they're a great sports town. And I'm sure the Kraken fan base has been growing. And we've already seen the following that they have you know, when they're not even with a roster yet and playing their first game. So it's going to be exciting. And I think whether you're on the Kraken or you're coming to play there on the road, it's going to be an amazing experience and a great thing for the NHL.
Brendan Dillon, Washington Capitals defenseman, joining us here today on Rental and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. How does it work? Is there any contact whatsoever between that list coming out and the expansion draft on Wednesday with your agent and the Kraken, anything like that?
Well, when it came to that, all I can really go off of is what happened with the Vegas draft. And, you know, there was rumors that I potentially could be going from San Jose at that time. And, you know, you're in contact with your agent all the time, but like I'm sure most of the media and us as players are seeing, Seattle's keeping a pretty tight knit and they're doing a great job of, you know, holding their cards close to their chest. And I think for Wednesday night, I believe is when the whole process is told. I know from players, a few guys that I know that are playing on Vegas when they found out kind of the morning of the expansion draft, and I'm sure it'll be pretty similar too. So some guys are going to be super excited to hear. I'm sure some guys might not want to leave whatever city they're in, but at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a real competitive team. They're doing a great job from growing the team and you know, obviously have a very stable staff from Ron Francis on down to the coaching. So it's an exciting time around the NHL.
I don't know what platform you guys use, but I'm sure you have a group chat with many of your peers, whether it's on the team or just people in the NHL fraternity. When you saw Carey Price was left exposed in the expansion draft, what did that group chat look like?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of names, as you mentioned earlier, of players. The Tarasenko's, the, you know, close friends of mine, Johansson's, and there's a lot of big name players that it's like, holy smokes, he would make 30 other NHL teams, 31 other NHL teams better. And that's when you talk about the protection lists and the routes that some of these teams went with their protections. It's like just so many different avenues from their cap hits to their ages to contracts. It's just, it is bizarre. And I mean, Carey Price just showed the entire hockey world that he's still one of the best goalies in the world. He's, you know, a huge part of that team. And of course the rumors and everyone's seen he's dealing with some injuries. And I think that just even shows more to his character and you know, how hard and how badly he wants to win to play through that stuff come playoff time. So I'm sure the Kraken and they're going to have to take a long look at that because you're talking about, again, one of the best goalies in the world.
Brendan, how much communication did you and your agent have with the Capitals leading up to the decision they had to make about which players to protect? I mean, did you have a pretty good sense that you would be unprotected, or were you kind of waiting until Saturday, Sunday, like the rest of us, to find out how it would go down?
Yeah, there's some conversation that goes, you know, you have your exit meetings with the coaches and GMs. And, you know, this season specifically for me, you know, I had one of my best seasons to date. And of course, you know, you sign your new contract last summer and, you know, you get acquainted with the team and especially with the way the season went with the protocols. And we had a new coaching staff here in Washington. So there was a lot of new things going on for me specifically. And we've got a lot of good defensemen and obviously led by Johnny Carlson on the back end. And there was so many different avenues that could go. And obviously we've got a superstar I'm sure you guys have heard of before in the name of Ovechkin that needs a new contract this summer. And, you know, when that happens, there's going to be different things you kind of got to dance around. And there's a few names that I was, you know, you're kind of surprised. Oh, wow, they didn't protect him, or they did protect him. But I think everything is done to, you know, in hopes of making your team in the best situation coming out of the draft. And I think Washington's just one of those situations and teams where they're going to lose a really good player. And, you know, there's four or five of us where, you know, you're just kind of like, wow, if you lose, I definitely could see him being a big part of the Kraken team. And I guess we're just going to have to, again, wait and see to Wednesday. But I guess to answer your question, no, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, I knew the morning of before the list had gone out officially that I wasn't going to be protected. And again, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Alex Ovechkin there, because I did want to ask, you know, more about straight hockey rather than expansion talk. I mean, you've played with a lot of great players throughout your career, but I'm not sure there's anyone else quite like Alex Ovechkin in the NHL. Since you came over to the Washington Capitals at last year's trade deadline, what's it been like getting the chance to play with Ovi night in, night out?
Well, you talk about legends of the game, and you talk about unique players that have put, you know, hockey even more so on the map in a place like Washington, D.C. And Alex Ovechkin, you know, scoring 700 plus goals, still enjoys it probably like he was scoring his first. And the captain of us here in Washington, somebody who is just continues to defy odds, it seems, with just scoring goals almost on command. And one of the best shots that'll probably go down in the game, potentially one of the best goal scorers to go down in the game, if not the best. So just a great guy to be lucky enough to share a dressing room with. Somebody who welcomes you. It doesn't matter if you're playing your first game or your 1,000th game. He's somebody that's going to make you feel included in the group. Loves to have a lot of fun around the room, as I'm sure people have seen through social media and the handshake lines and whatnot that go on before games. But yeah, just a really, really cool relationship that I'm lucky enough to have with one of the best of all time.
Nikita Kucherov, I haven't seen him swimming in fountains, but right after winning that Stanley Cup, his press conference performance was one for the ages. Is that Ovechkin light? Like, is that in the same category of Ovechkin after winning the Stanley Cup, the performance that Kucherov put on?
Oh, it's got to be up there. You think about these two, and again, Kucherov, one of the best of the all time as well. I mean, back to back ridiculous playoffs, two Stanley Cups now. I think when it gets to that point, you can say whatever you want to say in the media. It doesn't really matter. And I think it was entertaining, and it's fun to see that sometimes, you know, instead of just the cliches and you know, your typical interview after a sports event, to get some genuine, you know, thoughts, some genuine reaction. And you know, he's one of the best players in the world, and I think it was a lot of fun to see that from a fellow player.
You're right about that. A couple more minutes with Brendan Dillon, Washington Capitals defenseman, with us here today on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd. A much different kind of announcement today in the National Hockey League, and he is not yet a National Hockey Leaguer, but you probably know his name, and I'm guessing you've seen this by now, Brendan. Luke Prokop, third-round pick of the Nashville Predators, current defenseman with the Calgary Hitmen. He posted today on social media that he's gay, and he wanted to share his truth with the world. What was your reaction to seeing that announcement?
Well, I think first and foremost, just super proud of him. Super proud for being himself and being able to come out and feel confident enough to share that with not just, you know, his friends and family, but with the world. And I think we're seeing more and more of that, of people building up the confidence and just truly being themselves. I think in this world, whether you're a hockey player or you're a teacher in a school, whatever your career path might be, you've got to feel comfortable in your own skin. You know, you've got to be able to embrace yourself. And for Luke, I mean, he's breaking down barriers. He's someone who already, you know, just scrolling through social media, is receiving so much support. And I think from the Predators organization through all 32 other organizations, you know, everyone's completely on board with him, and hoping that this, if anything, this just makes his mind a little bit more at ease if it was something he was hiding on the inside for a few years. But you know, for myself as a fellow WHL alumni and someone from out west, it's cool to see that happen. And you know, again, hopefully he's going to help a lot of other young hockey players.
And it will be specific to his individual situation, but you hope, as you just alluded to, that this has far larger ramifications. And we talk a lot about hockey culture and where it's going, how it needs to improve in certain cases. You know, Luke mentioned in an article that's out there, Pierre LeBrun wrote for The Athletic, that, hey, yeah, I've heard some language in dressing rooms. In fact, I've said some things myself, and that needs to change, and hopefully it will. Is hockey a more accepting place now than when you first broke into it?
You know, I think from seeing all the other major sports, the baseballs, the NFL, basketball, I can't speak on what a locker room is like in those leagues. But, you know, for hockey in general, from when I was, younger in minor hockey through junior and now into the NHL. Hockey's one of the most including, great, whether you're a young guy, old guy, whatever race you are. We want everyone to feel part of a family. We want teammates to all be hanging out together, included together, whether that's going for beers or going for dinner. And I think there's going to be no different, whether someone's gay on your team or not. You want him to come and spend time with you and get to know that individual more. And I think that's something in hockey culture that, through people and the Black Lives Matter movement that's been going on over the last couple of years now, it's really cool to see how that's kind of, going through the league, and players are more now knowledgeable on different items and topics and able to almost go out of their way to do a better job than they can just because they know more about it. And I think Luke now is again, when you talk about breaking barriers and helping younger players kind of understand more. I think that's the first thing, is to be knowledgeable about whatever it is. And I'm sure Luke's teammates next year are going to be a lot more understanding and, a lot more better than maybe if they didn't understand what he was and he was keeping it to himself. So all in all, a great day for hockey.
And because of all of that, as someone who is an established NHL player, do you feel a personal responsibility, whether it's last summer with Black Lives Matter movement or with an issue like this with somebody revealing their sexuality, which has not typically been discussed in the National Hockey, do you feel a personal responsibility, Brendan, to show public support and to show that inclusivity?
Oh, I definitely do. I think whether that's, being in an interview like this on the media or from, your own personal accounts on Twitter or Instagram, whatever it might be. I think it's getting behind someone and making sure they know that you've got their back just goes a lot further down the line. And when you see the players that have come out and been helping in the Black Lives Matter movement and people that have now been helping with Luke and getting behind him already today. I mean, we're not even 24 hours into the announcement from him. And I think it's already, the snowball effect to help and be more inclusive is already well on its way. So whatever locker room in Nashville he's in, whether that's next year or at his camps coming up throughout the summer, I'm sure he's just going to be welcomed with wide open arms. And again, hopefully more players are able to benefit from it down the road.
Well said, Brendan. We really appreciate you taking the time. It's going to be an interesting week. I know you'll be watching with very great interest what happens over the next couple of days. Thank you very much for your time. Have a great summer. Look forward to doing this again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That is Brendan Dillon, Jamie. And look, when we booked Brendan Dillon yesterday, Raja Shergill, who's producing the program today, fantastic job of lining him up, a guy who's wondering about the expansion draft. We didn't think we'd be having a conversation about what Luke Prokop announced here today. I'm glad to hear from a National Hockey Leaguer who doesn't want to stray away from the conversation and is happy to have it.
Yeah, great. I mean, he was super open and honest and candid about the expansion draft process, and then, super honest and candid about the different conversation towards the end there. I really enjoyed that interview, and I love seeing this. Obviously, Brendan Dillon from Surrey, from the Vancouver area. So on our Vancouver message box, we were being flooded with text saying, hey, can we get this guy in Vancouver? He sounds like he would be an immediate fan favorite. And you understand why. That was a great interview with Brendan Dillon.
We got a lot of questions coming in about the expansion draft as well. A lot of comments coming in, and we will get to them throughout the course of the show. We've got some wide open spaces a little later on in the program, but we do have a conversation to address about the Montreal Canadiens, and there are a bunch of them. So we're going to head to Montreal next. That's when it worked for Louis Jean of TVA Sports. He will join us right after this on Rintoul and Sermon with Jamie Dodd.